Hey everybody, it's James. Just a quick disclaimer before we jump into our regularly scheduled episode. Now, we recorded this episode on August 14th, 2018, and on August 16th, sadly, we lost our Queen of Soul. So our opening segment does not reflect that. We are not assholes. We were really pulling for our queen, but alas, she has moved on from this realm, and she has essentially completed her assignment, her mission in this life, and she has moved on. I think even she, Queen Aretha, would find humor in our segment, especially now that she has passed. I think she's got a, you know, bigger sense of humor about things. And she knows that we love her, we R-E-S-P-E-C-T her, and cherish her. She has such a lexicon of music. She busted down walls, doors, ceilings, buildings, just trailblazing, this black woman who had hits in almost every single decade over the last 50 years. I mean, that is a long-ass career, which is just so amazing. She was just such a voice. There's no other voice like her. And we're just thankfully we still have so much of her music to live by, heal by, feel by, and get inspired by. So, Miss Aretha Franklin, thank you so much for your talent. Let us be inspired by your life and let our own talents shine and light up the world just as you did. So back to our regularly scheduled program. Enjoy.
Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James.
The Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. Minority Corner.
What you got baking in the oven?
Some books.
Oh,
we're gonna burn this place down.
Okay.
Flammable. I don't know if that's corner. Where,
okay. A little Fahrenheit 451 happening here. Aneka's burning it down with knowledge. Okay.
Fuck reading. No, it's the reverse of that.
So you're putting them in the freezer to prevent them from getting burned.
Yes. So, I am giving you some books that will expose you to alternative Latin American canon, and then also some women of color authors.
Oh, serving
that's
it
exciting.
Up.
Exciting. What you got?
All right. Good. Well, once you get slapped up in the head with an ice-cold book from the freezer, we're going to do a little Minority Corner Masterpiece Theater.
Ooh, I'm
excited. I have unearthed one of the last interviews that James Baldwin, piggybacking off our corner, our talk last week about James Baldwin. We're going to do a reading. Aneke, I cast you as the journalist.
Oh, thank you. Ooh, my name is on the list.
Yes, you are. Check the audition list, and it's just your name. You're on it. Or the cast list. You run to the theater door. The cast list is just you. Others audition. Kelly Rowland was there, but you got the part instead.
I'm a good actress.
I know you are. Okay. I've been in a few shows with you, actually. Either playing my wife, my girlfriend, or my sister. It's our like fifth show together. This is amazing.
I know. It's exciting.
And we're doing a masterpiece teleplay or radio play. What are the kids doing?
Radio play.
Old-timey radio play of James Baldwin, one of his last interviews of The Village Voice, and see what he had to say about race, sexuality, and writing Giovanni's Room.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Also, we have some things to talk about.
We're talking about Aretha Franklin, I think. We're talking about her and a little bit of civic duty talk again.
And Black Klansman.
Yes.
I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I have some thoughts. So let's get into it.
Let's dive in, y'all. Hey, James.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Just coming in singing. I'm coming in hot.
Yes.
Hot off the presses. I'm coming in singing.
Yes.
Coming in singing. Something, I think they say coming in swinging, but I'm not swinging. I'm singing.
I like that because we're more of a musical-based podcast, not a sports-based podcast.
Yeah, we're more, you know, I was trying to do a sports analogy to one of my clients the other day and I couldn't do it. What's that one that they say it's like the key to home run runs is bats?
Hits? I would think it's bats.
Is disco hits?
You need a fucking bat to get a home run.
That's so it makes sense. And they're always playing the disco tracks at the baseball games anyways.
Are
because
they?
Base- Baseball's a little gay. It's a little gay.
Because of all the
At
butts,
least the games the... I go to. Oh. The Buds. And, oh, maybe that was a circuit party. That's what it was.
Was it a baseball themed circuit party?
It was a baseball themed circuit party. So I get them confused.
I was going to go with you on that one, though, before you got okay. the circuit. Because you know jock straps and the butts of mm-hmm. baseball. That...
And jock straps are hella gay. Like, they're just, they're
Didn't
the gays.
You...
They're jock straps are like the G strings of gay men. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like, you even gave a tip to wear jock straps. For some occasion. Yeah,
Ooh,
because you said something about
so
it lifting your
information.
Butt. It lifts your butt,
oh, yeah.
right?
Yeah. It does lift your butt. It keeps your junk like right where you need it to be. It's just like an all around.
So you don't yeah. lose it? What?
Yeah, like it gives a little junk lift.
Oh, okay.
So
oh.
someone's like, ooh, look at that package. Mm. Like, you know?
I imagine it gives it more girth too.
It just all the things. And mm-hmm. your butt just gets to be doing its best thing. Like everybody loves
love
a breezy
that.
Butt.
Everybody loves love a butt doing butt. Its best thing. Living its best life.
Living its butt life. Yeah. Its best butt life.
That butt is living its best butt life.
Put that on a t-shirt and give it to grandma.
Why grandma? But all right, I'll go with you for that.
Grandma loves t-shirts,
grandma
especially when they're
fun.
Free.
She
grandma
likes
she'll make a
fun.
Quilt out of those t-shirts.
She will.
She'll quilt them.
The crochet
speaking of
shirt
grandma,
that says, yes. living your best butt life.
If I could abruptly and uncomfortably switch gears here.
Yeah, let's take it to another level.
Well, because why I came in singing, I was coming in singing in honor of the still doing her thing, Aretha Franklin.
Man.
I just found out on the news.
Yeah.
And every time someone that I, when I find out that someone I've made fun of on the podcast isn't doing well, I always feel guilty.
I know. I feel bad too, because I've always taken a stink. But well, first of all, let's clarify. One,
yes.
we're recording this on Tuesday of the week. So if you're listening to this later and something
and
has
something
happened.
Something has happened to Miss Franklin, Miss R-S, how do you spell that? What's that song?
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Thank God for that song. Because like how... Respect is not an easy
I mean,
one to say.
Clearly,
sing.
It's
sing
still having trouble for us.
Decades later.
But okay,
she's not doing
she's
well.
Not so,
I found out this morning that she's in hospice. Not like
yes.
I personally found out.
It
like,
wasn't like somebody
no
like told you.
It was, I looked on the yes. I looked on Vulture and like that's what I found out. I just yeah. want to make sure. I want to keep 100 on the podcast. So like,
you're
oh,
not
James
that
personally
connected,
found-
James. You
Not
host
yet.
One
no.
purple carpet and you know
and,
you're just
yeah,
kidding.
I know all black people, all black celebrities I'm now connected to. No. I found it the same time as you. I looked on the interwebs.
Yeah,
so she's in the I found out that she was doing not well. And then I looked in this morning. She's in hospice.
I heard some more news too. So first
okay.
she was gravely ill. Then she was in hospice. Now she's at home with family. She's surrounded by family.
Okay.
Apparently she's cracking jokes, recognizing people, being, you know, Aretha
in
Franklin.
You know what? She needs Patti LaBelle to show up so that way she can side-eye Patti LaBelle and she's back to her old self.
No. Because this is the problem that I have with Aretha Franklin.
Okay.
And I feel bad saying this, but I can say this because everybody's been like saying like lovely stuff about Aretha Franklin. Like, for one thing, she...
And you're not having
it. I am
okay.
having it because she is a legend. No matter how stinky she's
is.
Been to other legends.
To other legends. Patti, who is like equal queen, like there's Mary's Queen of Scots and Elizabeth Queen of England,
yes,
and they're both equally
they are
queens.
Equally queens from you know the same
Queen
area.
Candace, Queen Hephaestus,
or whatever.
Queen Khalifa, they're all equal queens.
So a lot of people have been saying things. One thing that was awesome about Aretha Franklin is she was one of the first people to actually support Angela Davis and like bail her out continuously during her trials, which
damn.
Is fucking awesome. And I didn't know that. But
yeah.
other stories people are trying to twist into her sounding nice, but they just come off sounding like
sure.
I was reading an article where they were like, oh, Aretha Franklin is gravely ill. We remember the time when she got mad at Beyonce because
yeah,
she called Tina Turner the queen. And then she was like all mad and sassy about it. And then they were like, but then she came around and was happy for Beyonce. And the quote was kind of bitchy. The quote was like something about like, what was it? She like lost... it was her lip syncing controversy. So she like people thought that Beyonce lip synced
the national anthem.
Yeah, and the article that's trying to twist Aretha Franklin into saying something nice, she was like, oh, people are saying that Beyonce lip synced. I laughed all day long about that, but her recorded vocal sounded great. That's not nice.
Wow,
that's
no.
not nice.
That nope. But you know what? Here's a sad thing, though, Neke.
Yeah.
I'm not a journalist, but I believe that those journalists have dug into the archives to find nice quotes. And I think that's as nice as it gets from Ms. Franklin.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm just going to choose to focus on Angela Davis and how
that's
she,
a good
like,
one. Let's just see. Because you know what? It's funny. When you were talking about bad Aretha Franklin stories, that was the first one to pop into my mind.
Oh,
and
no.
Then you read it. And I have it burned into my retinas, into my visual memory.
No.
When she was walking, you know the moment.
Yes.
She was walking
of
down
course.
That aisle at that show, and she was being, a tribute was given to her, and then Miss Patti LaBelle sitting in the aisle,
yes.
reaching out for her.
For a
and
handshake.
Aretha looks at her hand and keeps walking.
Like, what the fuck? Okay,
so,
you know what?
Yep.
God,
gotta be nice.
God bless you, Aretha Franklin, for keeping
prayers
it
and
100
songs to you. Yeah, you know
all
what?
The
she,
time. Not
and
a,
you know what? It goes to, I appreciate that she doesn't, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
she keeps it real.
And she doesn't have to be a nice tap dancing
nope.
woman.
She's like,
I'm talented, and that's all.
That's
my
all.
Crowd, she's like, my crown has been bought and paid for.
Yes.
My ancestors were in those fields. Fuck y'all, I'm the queen.
It's
so,
the truth. You know what? So. I respect that. I don't have to like it, but I respect it. And like...
I mean, maybe we could take a page out of her book. Sometimes, like, we don't have to be, like, we
right.
could be a little bit more, you know what? I'm going to take what's rightfully mine. I'm talented.
Right.
I'm beautiful.
Exactly.
I'm going to do my thing.
She
so,
was,
you know
she
what?
Was doing that thing that most Black women are taught not to do, where she knew she was talented. She stood by her talent, and she didn't have to sugarcoat shit. So, you know
nope.
what?
Props to you, Ms. Franklin.
We'll take a page, a grain of salt, not the whole canister.
And we're sending you prayers and
prayers.
Songs your way, Mama. You know, I was just, it's funny, I was just talking to someone the other day that I couldn't believe, because we're talking about all the people who were gone, like and Whitney and
I
Michael
know,
and
so
Prince,
sad.
And that I had literally just said, ooh, Aretha has outlived them all, and then she still has.
You need to keep people out of your mouth, James. I mean, she's still alive,
and then the
though.
Next,
she's still
but the
alive.
Next day she was in the
I
hospital.
I know, James.
So
don't
I
you
gotta
mention
be careful.
Any other
oh,
legends.
Oh, wait. I could, maybe it's a power, you know what? With mm-hmm. great power comes great responsibility.
Bring
so here
back.
We go. So glad that Trump guy's doing okay.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's...
Come Friday. Oh,
stop
so glad
it.
Mike Pence is having a wonderful life
stop
and day
it.
And time is not in jail. Glad that's not happening. Oopsie.
You know what my fear is? That someone's going to take
what?
That splice and be
and
like,
gonna be
we're going to be like, we'll be labeled like a right-wing podcast.
Terrorist group. Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know,
oh, I see
just
what you're
like,
saying.
Out of context.
Oh,
out of
God.
Context.
See, that's how they get you. That's how they get you. Next thing you know, you and I are like co-hosting InfoWars.
Yeah,
and
we're
like, how
we're
the
like,
fuck
how
did we
get
here?
Here?
How am I sitting next to Alex Jones and that like... blonde, what's that young blonde girl
Tomi,
who's annoying?
Whatever.
Oh, God,
Tomi
out of my face.
Racism.
Yeah, that's her name. Speaking of racism,
yes.
I saw Black Klansman yesterday.
Oh, you saw
the other day.
It. I want to see it. I've been hearing mixed reviews.
Oh, well, they're crazy if they're mixed, because the only review I've got is it's fucking amazing. Don't
Ooh.
Walk, don't run. Just be there. Teleport your ass.
I'm excited.
Take grandma in her shirt that says butts living
yeah,
its best life.
Crocheted, remember.
Oh, yeah.
Or knitted, whatever you said.
I can't think of a lot. Like, this is probably one of my favorite Spike Lee films in a long time.
He's very up and down. You can agree to that,
Do the
right
thing is amazing.
Of
it's
course,
a classic.
Classic.
She's all that. No, wait.
Jungle Fever, remember?
I remember that. But what's the other one? She's all that. No, she's
that
gotta have
not
it.
That is not She's all that. She's gotta okay. have it. The freaking...
Could you imagine if Spike Lee directed She's all that? He's like, oops.
I
didn't ask for this cast.
His discography is so all over the place. I would not be surprised,
but Black
honestly.
Black Klansman is such a great movie.
That's
and
good.
It's, again, one of those stories that, like, why haven't we heard this before? And you'll find out in the end why you haven't heard it before.
Oh.
And I feel like...
True story, right?
Yep, based on true story. And I feel like it's Spike back at like what he like just he's just back.
Back
and I
to
think
his
that's
form.
Because and I think it's because it's the culture of the climate. And I think that Spike Lee does best when we're in rocky sort of climates. Because
yeah.
he's able to sort of pull these conversations. Because I remember Inside Man, like I think there wasn't a lot of when was Inside Man? When did that come
that
out?
Was like in the mid-2000s, I would say. Mid-2000s.
Oh,
no, it was Bush.
So I don't know why he didn't come out with any... I don't know. He made Inside Man during that. I can't speak for him for why... But I feel like he...
I didn't mind Inside Man.
But it didn't, like... I liked it, but it wasn't, like... I have to go back and watch, but I don't feel like it was as... culturally relevant?
Because I don't think it was supposed to be. It was a heist movie. It's like a, he was trying to do the action kind of bank heist movie. Like, it wasn't like as heated as like Malcolm X or
Regular. But even Crooklyn was sort of like a, it was showing like the black experience in Brooklyn, like a young black girl's experience. So it dealt with like things of like, you know, religion and race and just like her experience. Where, and I think like, you know what, he deserves to be able to direct an Inside Man, but I just like love my Spike when he is coming out swinging and singing.
You know, like you gotta like try something new, you know?
And he did.
But
yeah.
he went back, which is good.
Yes. He went back to form. And like, I think to me, this movie just shows how important Spike Lee is in our cinema lexicon. And I do, let's not forget him. And I think it's a very powerful film.
That's good.
It's also one of those movies that I every time I watch one of these movies like this, it makes me look at white people a little. I'm like, uh-oh, what?
James.
And I'm not saying all white people, but I will say this. A lot of y'all back in the day were crazy.
A lot of white people
back in the day were racist and crazy as fuck. And this movie specifically takes place in Colorado, I think that we, again, think about racism only being in the South, and it wasn't. It was a nationwide experience.
That's the thing. What we're saying right now is a lot of people have a lot of, you know, have uncles and aunts that you're like, oh, we just, you know, whatever, don't really like pay them any mind, but that's racism and you shouldn't you shouldn't come for it. In fact, which brings me to a good point, is Stephen Miller's uncle just came out and wrote an article in Politico that I highly suggest everybody read, and he is going against everything that Stephen Miller has been going, like, Stephen Miller is the architect behind all the horrendous immigration laws.
Right. He looks like a
villain.
He looks like a villainous vampire.
Yeah.
Not all vampires. Some vampires are nice and cute and sexy, but not him.
No.
Not Stephen Miller.
He's like Nosferatu. And I can say that because he literally came up with the idea of kids in cages. But
and that's something that a Nosferatu villain would come up with.
Exactly.
You know what? He's like the same age as me. Don't look it.
I know. That's just keep joining your heart. It keeps you young and beautiful.
I was going to say that, you know why? That's evil in that man's heart.
Exactly.
You see Steve Bannon? You're like, evil lives there.
So what I was going to say is that his uncle comes out, writes the article, talks about his family's immigrant history and how Stephen Miller is a gigantic hypocrite and how his family wouldn't have been even here if the laws that he's imposing were around during the time that his grandfather came here. So that, take a page from that book. Just because your family doesn't mean that you have to agree with everything that somebody should say, and you should try and challenge it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love it that, like, usually you hear about the crazy uncle. This guy's like, I got a crazy ass nephew.
I know, he's like, I'm the sane uncle.
My nephew is crazy as fuck. But yeah, I'm so curious. I can't wait for you to check it out. It's very powerful, especially the way, I can't wait for you to see it. I will just leave it at that.
I'm excited. And I feel like we're rich in black movies.
Oh, it is like black mecca at the movie screen right now. Yeah. Just like all kinds of things.
I know.
And there's so many movies that like I can't even keep up. Like Taraji P. Henson keeps making movies.
She's coming out with a new one. Isn't
she's got What Women
Tracy
Want?
Morgan in it.
And she's got What Men Want.
Yes.
So it's she's reclaiming that from Mel Gibson. And I'm interested. I'm excited. I'm glad it exists.
Me too.
I think it's weird. I feel like What Women Want was able to be like this whimsical PG-13 sort of comedy. I just feel like What Men Want and Think. Ugh. I think that the movie's going to only, like, it's not going to go as far as it probably needs to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I'm like, ooh, it's going to be maybe a little too whimsical.
I don't know. Well, okay, here's the thing. And that's the patriarchy coming into play. Because women want some nasty, dirty, shitty things, too.
That's true, too. You're right. And I was thinking that, too. But
like, we can be freaks.
But I just think, like, I don't know that I would want, like, I think the movie can't go, it's gonna keep it, you know.
Yeah, it's not
safe.
Gonna be like titties and beer for straight men or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You're right. Should we save this for next week? But I had my jury duty and the verdict, because then I can talk about the case.
Ooh. That sounds like a good teaser, though.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Because well, I want a full breakdown. I want to ask all the questions. Mm. Ooh, if you got questions for James, you should like write us some questions.
Well, and just generally, like, I cannot reiterate enough. Yeah. Like, do your fucking jury duty and do it seriously and do it proudly. Because, like, honestly, I'm not going to, I'll come back to this next week, but like, literally, it was a very, very dark-skinned black guy versus the cops. And
stop
it was
it.
Like, girl, the bias was the was it was a waste
see,
of my tax dollars.
We
the
need
bias
to,
was everywhere. Yeah. And it was like, oh, I see exactly what's going on reading between the lines. And I went in there trying to be as open mind. Let me hear the case. Yeah. Let me hear the facts.
Right.
What facts? I couldn't believe
James,
that it made it all the way to court. I couldn't believe it.
I need a whole segment. Be it the opening segment, be it a corner, whatever.
Okay.
I need a whole segment to break this down because we've talked about like the judicial system. We've talked about the 13th directed by Ava DuVernay.
Yeah.
We have talked about the kneeling of the NFL players, police brutality. I feel like your experience, especially with this trial, I really want to unpack it.
Okay. Yeah. And I took notes. So don't worry.
Yes.
It's all going to be. And in fact, like a friend of mine just sent me, because I was talking to him about the importance of doing jury duty, and
yes.
he was feeling kind of like, oh, the system is so rigged. And I'm like, yeah, that's all the more reason for us to like get involved
yeah,
and like
true.
Show up.
It's so true.
And he then sent me this case where it was literally, I'll bring it up next week. I don't know the exact case that it was, but we'll make that one of the main segments for next week, talking about just the judicial system and jury specifically.
Yeah.
But in this case, it was like, it was a guy who was gay who was sentenced to like some crazy prison system sentence by a jury of a bunch of straight guys who, when they were polled later, did say that they found his sexuality like disgusting and wrong.
See, this is fucked up. This is
so
fucked
that's
up.
Bias, and they shouldn't have been like that's
they
not a jury.
Have been
that's
on
not,
a jury.
That's not
that's
an
not
impartial
a jury
appears.
No.
So that's why it's like, you know, again, I said this last week, but the people that we really need on the trials, like,
they
you guys are very smart
it.
And crafty,
right.
and you get out of your jury duty.
It's true.
And we need you to turn that bus around and fulfill your civic duty. It's like, this is part of democracy. If we want to live in a democracy, these are the things that we have to do, and we have to take ownership and be a part of it. If we don't, then this is like a small thing. Like, again,
right.
then we start living in a dictatorship and a dystopian type world. But if we want to live in a democracy, it's your duty. So
all the snaps to that. I am ready. This is going to be so good. And you know what? Maybe I will do that jury duty. You're inspiring
okay.
me to.
I love that. I'm still at a. You're still at a maybe. Okay, then you know
no,
what?
I,
no,
I
wait,
haven't
you
gotten
know
the.
What? No, I accept your challenge. I accept your challenge, madam, because you know what? It is my job to have to prove the case. So
ooh,
I have to prove the case. So we'll see next week. We're not wrapping up the episode. Don't go away.
No,
but, next
we're
week,
going into a corner
I'm
now.
I'm going to prove the case. Yeah, let's go. No, just a little. I love it. We've been that way we just keep y'all coming
no, this
back.
Is good.
Get your popcorn,
mm-hmm.
get your gummy bears,
get
your Tutti Frutties, and get ready. But what are we getting ready for next?
We are going to go into some books because it's the summer of reading. Summer is closing up. School's coming in. And let's keep our education on with some multi-racial, multi-diverse people that we should be reading.
Oh, good point. And don't ever stop reading because I heard that actually kids get dumber over the summer.
And what's happening to us adults then?
Yeah, because they ain't reading.
It's summer
Ooh.
All the time because we don't
oh,
go to school.
Girl. Serve up the facts to them. Serve up the books. It's time to get information.
Yeah. Ooh, nice. Thanks, Beyonce.
Hello, I'm Oliver Wong, DJ, scholar, and journalist.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes, music supervisor and stiletto devotee. And we host Heat Rocks, a podcast where we invite our favorite musicians, writers, and scholars to talk about the albums that have changed their lives.
Morgan, what exactly is a heat rock?
It's a record that's like hot fire, combustible.
Basically, just a really, really good album.
We've taken a deep dive into Nigerian funk from the 70s.
He kind of had like a bad reputation in town as just being like a sketchy dude. And he was just making music that for thousands of miles around him, he was the only person doing anything like that.
1980s teen comedy soundtracks.
This soundtrack always felt the same to me as like when I would find a great blazer at a thrift store that I could, and I was like, oh, this is going to be me now.
We've talked about Prince, Boys to Men, Kendrick Lamar, and everything in between. Heat Rocks every Thursday here on Maximum Fun.
Okay, Aneka, now let's get information.
Books, 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 books.
I feel like there's an Aretha Franklin tie in here.
Probably.
She's like, I'm the queen.
Yeah. I don't know if that's her
we're
song,
like,
but
we're
I'll
just talking
it.
About books, Aretha.
She's like, I don't
B-O-O-K-S-R-E-A-D. T-O-M-E. Okay. Read books to me, baby. Okay.
Ooh. Okay, so yep. I am reading from two lists that I found to be very informative and very exciting. The first one is from Remezcla, R-E-M-E-Z-C-L-A.com. Mm-hmm. And it is titled, The Literary Canon is Mostly White. Here's an alternative Latin American reading list.
What?
Yes.
Didn't even know that was possible, and it's so true.
You know me. I love a fucking alternative reading list. Like, re-educate
like,
your mind.
Here?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because all of the books that we read in school are, you know, not diverse. We got Hemingway, Faulkner, To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper. You know, it's all white Western American culture.
There are only two books that I can recall reading in high school, and I was in the AP smart people classes, and that's stupid mm-hmm. to say, not that other people weren't smart, but like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
I'm
they
saying.
Challenge those kids, let's face it.
Yes, right. They're like, yeah. And it's like, but it's so sad for the other kids. They're like, good luck.
No.
It's kids when our money up here. But there were two books that I read that starred non-white people. It was Native Son and Their Eyes Are Watching God. I think that was it.
That's
I
it.
I think it was... I think there was maybe one starring a young Asian character.
Oh, good. That's more than
was
other
it
people
thousand
have gotten.
Pieces of Gold? Is that a book?
Oh, yes, yes.
Thousand Pieces
I don't,
of Gold.
I think that... if it,
yeah, I think it was 1,000 Pieces of
yeah,
Gold.
Yeah, the name is very familiar. That's very
yeah.
good.
I don't remember what happened, but there must have been
at least,
at least
the
a
name
thousand
stuck
pieces
with
of,
you.
There must have at least been 1,000 Pieces of Gold involved in it somewhere.
Somehow. Okay, so the cool thing about this list is they give you a, if you read this, then try this, which I always liked. It's like a nice
like
alternative.
Like a Reading Rainbow.
Sure.
Because you know, doesn't LeVar Burton always be like, if you like this book, try
yeah,
this one.
Yeah, he does
see?
The recommendation. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So,
see?
Okay, you got me. You pulled me into the stream. Okay, so the first one is if you read Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger and you like that whiny ass book, then
ooh, I never read it.
It's don't do it.
Okay,
cool. You're not a jaded teenager. Only people who like those books are jaded teenagers who think the world is dumb. So it's tailored for them.
I think my instructor was like, "Nope, you're reading Their Eyes Are Watching God." If yeah. that replaced it,
you know what? That's fine. Okay, so this is another book that can replace it. It's called "I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter," and it is written by Erica L. Sanchez. Okay, so let me read the little snippet.
Give it to me.
Holden Caulfield is a classic disaffected teen. See, that's the teen from Catcher in the Rye. Like I said, whiny ass bored teen. Known for slouching around New York, decrying phonies, and having a depressive crisis. Julia, the protagonist of Erica L. Sanchez's coming of age novel, wanders the streets of Chicago, confronting the confines of the expectations her parents have for her life, while also confronting the mysteries of her recently deceased sister's life. I am not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter takes the same anger and sadness around the limitations of relationships in the world that Holden Caulfield experiences and filters them through the experiences of a Mexican teenage girl growing up in America. Already improvement.
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting. You know what you had me at? There's a mystery. I love
right?
a mystery.
There
is
no mystery to Catcher in the Rye.
What? Is it just him walking around being
like,
he sucks.
Like, he meets a girl that's like younger and she's like trying to like
younger.
Be his friend. Yeah, they're like, you know, like she's, you know, kind of like a buddy kind of thing.
Okay.
And
nothing
then he
weird.
Gets sent. No, nothing weird. He gets sent away to boarding school and he's like, he just is pissed. That's the book. And I know, I'm sorry,
like
a lot of people...
lavish life to me, boarding school. That sounds really... Exotic and fun.
I know. I like some of you guys liked that book, so I'm not going to bash it too much, but
I haven't read it and I don't like it. So next.
Okay, here's another one.
On that.
So I'm skipping around a little bit. So this one is, if you have read the book Beowulf, which I had to read, a lot of people had to read, it's the first book that a lot of people say is the origin of the hero's journey. But I mean, this is just one part of the world. There's other heroes' journeys out in the world.
I bet you there are some like African origins of hero's journey. I challenge that.
So here we go. This one is called Popol Vuh. P-O-P-O-L. Another word, Vuh. V-U-H. Okay. So, just as the Brits have their ancient epic poetry, so does Latin America have the Popol Vuh, a narrative by the K'iche' people of present-day Guatemala, telling their creation myths and tales of warriors and heroes. Written down by a visiting missionary in about 1550, the Popol Vuh is one of the only remaining traces of what was once a vibrant oral tradition of stories in pre-Columbian America.
Wow.
Right? I love that, because it's like, let's hear an origin story from somebody else, you know? Like, let's really kind of mix it up.
Yeah. I never read Beowulf. We went to I feel like, did I go to a shitty high school? Because
I didn't read Beowulf either.
I saw the movie with Angelina Jolie.
Oh, yeah, with Grendel and stuff. No, it's like, it's, I mean, once again.
Beowulf.
You're not really missing out on much. It is like, once you read Beowulf, you understand where a lot of stories get their inspiration from, because it's very much like, oh, you know? But
yeah,
because you've read all the other stuff, you're like, this is like some old boring thing, but it's actually their original, supposedly,
which they probably stole from some other tribe of some sorts. But I will say, I think that was really fascinating already, is that like every culture has a history of storytelling, and how important stories are. So I'm so fascinated by that, and all the more important for us to diversify the stories that we listen to.
Exactly. That's why it's like, I'm not saying don't read Beowulf, but also try the Popol Vuh. You know, get two different ideas.
Ooh, I will definitely try the Popol Vuh.
Okay, this one is, if you have read The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, which I did not read, but a lot of people talk about The
Bell Jar. Yay, finally.
But a
Your
lot of people talk about
as good
it.
As mine. Okay.
You know, it's like one of the canons that people bring up. This list is saying, if you like that, then you should try No One Will See Me Cry by Christina Rivera Garza. Okay. The Bell Jar is a feminist classic about growing up aimless and depression. And a bulk of the book takes place with the main character in a psychiatric hospital. With No One Will See Me Cry, Riviera Garza takes us into La Castaneda, the infamous turn-of-the-century asylum in Mexico City, to follow the path of one of its inmates and the inmate's photographer. Garza has been lauded as one of the best novelists working in Mexico by writers like Carlos Fuentes, and is becoming better known in the States. That sounds cool. That sounds fascinating. Well, I would also
even better know now, because we just mentioned her name on Minority Corner.
Yeah.
So get ready for them book sales.
Get ready.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. You're welcome.
Okay, so this is one that a lot of people read. This is one that everybody reads, especially if you're in California.
Well, we'll see, because, you know, my school seemed to be very different. Even though I went to school in an Air Force base, you would have thought we were
Anyways, that's weird. Did you read The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so you did read The Grapes. See,
that
California.
That dusty-ass book.
California fucking loves to throw you some Grapes of Wrath, because John Steinbeck spent some time in Monterey, right?
Yeah, and I feel like it's also like, aren't they migrating to California?
They're coming over here.
They're like, the rest of the country was being really shitty, but you know, it was dope. California.
Exactly.
I feel like they were just trying to get the California love in early.
Well, the Dust Bowl was pretty shitty.
God, could you imagine? Like, people complain. Like, I'm glad I'm living in 19... Wait, what year is this?
No 19s involved for a long time.
I was going to say 1998. I don't know.
Well, you went back to high school.
It was a good year.
You went back
Spice
to high school.
Spice Girls were living large, taking charge, getting jiggy with it. I just bought that Will. Was it the Willennium?
Were you
Willennium
in middle
album?
School in 1998, or were you in high school?
Yes, I was, girl. I was in the mid-dial school.
Oh, I was
with
in
my
high school.
Puberties and my braces.
Wow, look at
my
that.
And my running for president, and I lost.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I won for the next 3 years.
Oh, okay, good. Well, then I don't feel bad to take it back.
My hero's journey.
Okay, so if you read Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck, then you should try this book. It's called Signs Preceding the End of the World by Yuri Herrera. A migration across a vast, unwelcoming territory, the tensions of family, a wider arc of socio-political movements. Signs Preceding the End of the World treats migration into the United States in the same way that the Grapes of Wrath treats the Dust Bowl migrations of Oklahoma. See, I love that shit.
Yeah,
draw
that
a parallel.
Great.
Draw a fucking parallel. Okay, by at once humanizing it and placing it within a greater context. Signs comes with the added benefit of being an absolutely fresh, vibrant, modern novel. I love it.
That sounds great. You mentioned territory, so it's talking about like to the U.S. territory. So this
mm-hmm.
is like way before Grapes of Wrath. I think that's so fascinating because those are stories that you don't
well, is
ever
it?
Hear.
Let me just see.
Let's see.
Migration into the United States the same way that Grapes of Wrath treats the Dust Bowl migrations into Oklahoma. I don't think so. I think it's current.
Oh, it's like now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I would love to hear some stories about like just the U.S. territories from like a non-white perspective. Because
yeah,
I feel like
that would be interesting.
For a lot of people, maybe sometimes like learning. That's why storytelling is so important, because it allows you to empathize with someone more mm-hmm. so just than reading something out of a history book.
Right.
It just makes it like more human. So that's a great story that's, if it's not written, someone write it.
Somebody write it. Okay, so that was that list, and I will link the list in the show notes.
And link it up.
That, just to remind everybody, was from the website Remezcla, RemezCla.com. And then I'm moving on to a list from L.com. Go, L.
What? See, sometimes they be surprising you.
Yeah, and they have an extensive list of amazing books by women of color.
What? Hello.
Yeah, and the byline
ladies getting
is
formation.
I love the byline. There's really what's no it? Excuse not to have read one. Ooh.
Wait,
you tell
oh,
them.
That's the byline. That's not you.
No,
that's
the
byline.
Byline.
Are you working at L? Because that's like something like that you would have written. That sounds like something you would have written. Okay.
Okay. So this book has a fucking fascinating, beautiful cover. It's called Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi, A-D-E-Y-E-M-I. And the cover is like, it looks like an African warrior, and the headdress kind of goes into like white flames.
What?
Yeah, so Adeyemi's not... debut novel delves into a world of dark magic with a hint of danger in this captivating fantasy tale, which is sure to spawn more books to come. Influenced by the West African writer's own heritage, the story follows Inan and Amari, children of the Iron-Fisted King, and Zili and Tizan, siblings who have suffered under the king's regime, as they find themselves on a dark magic-filled quest for power.
I love dark magic filled quests for power.
Hello. If you like Game of Thrones, then you should probably pick this book up because it sounds fucking awesome.
Sounds amazing.
So that one, just to rehash that, is Children of Blood and Bone, and it is written by Tomi Adeyemi. Okay, so here's another one. Sick by Poro Chista Kakapur. Kakapur. So
you're
her,
doing it, girl.
This is hard,
look at you
man.
Pronouncing them names. You're doing
yeah,
it.
Ooh, I'm having a hard time. So the her first name is spelled P-O-R-O-C-H-I-S-T-A-A. Porochista. And her last name is spelled K-H-A-K-P-O-U-R. Kakapur. Kakapur. Okay.
Sounds right. I feel like you're at a spelling bee.
Whew, it's...
you know, sounds correct. Move
I
on.
I feel for her with my name. So it's called
you
Sick.
Did it.
Okay, it goes, this is not for the faint of heart. In this chilling memoir, the Iranian-born writer details her struggle with late-stage Lyme disease, drug addiction, and mental illness. Divided by setting, Kakapur takes you on a journey through her illness and the many locations that changed her course. From a college town to Germany to New York and L.A., Kakapur remembers the many psychological spaces which impacted her health the most, eventually accepting the diagnosis she had searched for over the course of her adult life. Ooh,
wow. And that is like a globe-trotting book right there, taking you all over the world.
So cool. Okay, so this one is So You Want to Talk About Race by Ujima Olew.
And the answer is yes. Yes, yeah. I do.
So I really want to highlight this book because she's not only is she fucking awesome on Twitter. I highly encourage all you guys to follow her on Twitter because she's hilarious. And she also posts like her makeup face and will also like make fun of her kids. But she's also like really matter of fact, frank and funny about talking about race. And her brother is married to Lindy West, who is an awesome writer as well. So literary family.
Sounds familiar. I've heard of her before.
She's definitely been around. So in Iwajima's Olohu's breakup book, she explores the complex reality of race relations in today's society, from police brutality and the Black Lives Matter movement to white privilege and the N-word. Olohu offers a contemporary and accessible take on the racial landscapes in America, addressing head-on issues that many Black people face.
Wow. You know what? Mm-hmm. When you're just talking about her, I mean, they all would be great guests, but her specifically is like, she'd be a great guest for the show.
Oh my God, she'd be amazing. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to, I'll put a pin in that.
Yeah, get her on the show. Get her on the show. Okay, so just rounding it out, here's, I'll do about two more. Here's one called My Old Faithful by Yang Huang. Family always makes for a good starting point in any novel, and Yang Huang's My Old Faithful evokes both the drama of familial intimacy and the ups and downs of the everyday life of a close-knit Chinese family. Featuring 10 interconnected short stories taken place over a 30-year period from China to the United States, Huang's nuanced approach to tackling family life is brilliantly executed with richly textured narratives from each family member, played out against the backdrop of China's social and economic change. That sounds cool. It sounds all like interlocking. I love a different perspective story, you know?
Yeah. And just with like those layers adding into it.
Mm-hmm. And then I will do one last one, and I'm gonna pick, let's do Hunger by Roxane Gay, because who doesn't love a little Roxane Gay?
Love me some Roxane Gay. Oh man, what can't she do?
She does it all. So body positivity isn't easy to come by. The process to accepting one's physique, flaws and all, can be a long and arduous one. In the words of Roxane Gay, living in a hostile, fat-phobic world can take its toll. In Hunger, she wrestles against the judgment placed upon her in a searingly honest memoir about self-image, weight, food, and more. Highly encourage it. Roxane Gay always speaks the truth. She
is the magical sitar of the world. She only speaks the truth. That's true. That's her.
I know.
Doesn't she also have a Netflix movie out called Roxane that is about her life as a young girl? Am I making that up?
I've never heard of that.
Okay, well, don't quote me on that. There's a movie called Roxane, and it's about her, and it's on Netflix. Or I had a fever dream about it.
I'm pretty sure it'd be fascinating.
It's about her as a young girl. I know there's at least a movie on Netflix called Roxane. Well, it's about a young Black girl, and maybe I just assumed it was about her. We'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll find out during the break.
Keep you posted.
Okay. We'll circle back on that.
So basically, I just wanted to give these books, every once in a while, I love to give a book list because I feel like, one, we all need to be reading ourselves, and two, books make great gifts. So if you like heard any of the descriptions that I was talking about and you know somebody that might be interested in some of the topics that I brought up, I would say buy them that book. That's the easiest, best way to be like secret to being a librarian is actually listening to the taste of what people like. Like my first question to people who say they don't read but like to read a book, I just ask them what type of movies do they like to watch? What type of TV shows do they like to watch? And
that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Magical librarians.
I mean, if you don't like, if you're like, oh, I don't read, and then a librarian's like, here's just any old book. Like what the fuck is that? That's not going to help anybody. So, so that's the best way to find a book for somebody, a loved one in your life, a young person, an old person, a middle-aged person, a person who's your age, any person, buy them a book.
Yeah. If they're a person or identify as such, get them a book.
Get them a book.
You know what? Here's a tagline for books. Books, great for people.
Yeah.
Not for dogs, but they're great for people. They really are. And in fact, I only buy, you'll be happy to know this, my librarian friend.
Yeah.
I only buy people books for gifts. Like Christmas, I do all my shopping online at Barnes & Noble, and then I'm done.
Okay, I love it.
Because it's also a great way to sort of nudge someone into like a direction of just like, I think you'd use a little bit of this, or this might help you. Or if someone's talking about something, or also there's a book that you wanted to read, you can give it to someone and then borrow it. And you know what they say, you never borrow a book, you get a book, so then you get the book back.
Okay, there you go. I love that. Tips all around. Just books.
It's a secret, shady way to get the book back to you.
Well, I'm ready for your corner. What are we doing?
We're going to find out. Stay tuned. We're going to solve the mystery about Roxane Gay. Does she have a movie on Netflix or not?
Okay.
Hey, have you checked out the Max Fun Store recently? If you head to maxfunstore.com now, you'll see a bunch of cool new stuff in there, along with your old favorites. We've got a colorful retro-inspired bubble shirt, plus stickers, buttons, and a poster. Reading Glasses fans will love their new library book-inspired shirt. And if you're a fan of beef, check back Friday for the debut of our Beef and Dairy Network merch. We've got all that and more from a ton of Max Fun shows. There's even a Rocket logo skateboard deck there. So go click around, see what we've got in stock, and buy yourself something fun at maxfunstore.com.
And we're back with a little bit of news.
Solve that mystery. James, would you like to inform us what Roxane movie is all about?
Actually, I think you should, Aneke. The results are in, and we did some digging. And what is Roxane about?
Well, first of all, it isn't just Roxane. Okay. It's Roxane.
Yes.
And it is a story of a teen battle rap champ, Roxane Shante.
And it wasn't written by Roxane Gay at all? Does Roxane Gay have any involvement in this movie?
No, none at all. Maybe she likes it.
I'm not kidding. This movie's been out since January 2017. Mm-mm. So for over a year, I have had it in my head that this is a movie about Roxane Gay. And as a child, and that was my mind saw what it needed to see. So there's that.
Oh well, we solved that mystery.
Well, now I wanted to circle back into, we had so much James Baldwin to talk about, and again, it's sort of making up for lost time. I don't think I really spent any time talking about James Baldwin really like in depth on this show. And to me, he is like the godfather of like, for me, what Minority Corner is, because he's like super intersectional, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like he's just such a brilliant guy. And so we didn't have time for this last week, so I wanted to squeeze some time in it this week, where it's sort of like it's a Minority Corner masterpiece theater.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can never go to read some excerpts. It was one of the last interviews that he did. It was with The Voice, with The Village Voice.
Village Voice, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, not just any voice, not Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, I was like, it's The Village Voice.
You know, The Voice, the singing hit show. He did an interview
with Adam Levine and all of that.
He sat down with Aguilera. Adam Levine and Christina Aguilera. No, The Village Voice, which was like the gay voice at the time. It's getting confusing. But you know, it's like the voice of the people.
Right.
Back in the 80s. And so he did this interview in June 26, 1984. And I think he died in 87. So this is, I think, one of the last interviews that he did. And he did it with Richard Goldstein of The Village Voice. And so Aneke and I are going to do a little reading for you. Aneke will play the part of Goldstein. I will play the part of James Baldwin.
All right, ready?
Yes.
Okay. Do you feel like a stranger in gay America?
Well, first of all, I feel like a stranger in America from almost every conceivable angle, except, oddly enough, as a black person. The word gay has always rubbed me the wrong way. I never understood exactly what is meant by it. I don't want to sound distant or patronizing because I don't really feel that. I simply feel it's a word that has little to do with me, where I did my growing up. I was never at home in it, even in my early days in the village when I saw... What I saw of that world absolutely frightened me, bewildered me. I didn't understand the necessity of all the role-playing, and in a way, I still don't.
You never thought of yourself as being gay?
No. I didn't have a word for it. The only one I had was homosexual, and that didn't quite cover whatever it was I was beginning to feel. Even when I began to realize things about myself, began to suspect who I was and what I was likely to become, it was still very personal, absolutely personal. It was really a matter between me and God. I would have to live the life he had me to live. I told him quite a long, long time ago there would be two of us at the mercy seat. He would not be asking all the questions.
So when we talk about gay life, which is so group-oriented, so tribal...
And I am not that kind of person at all.
Do you feel baffled by it?
I feel remote from it. It's a phenomenon that came along much after I was formed. In some sense, I couldn't have afforded it. You see, I am not a member of anything. I joined the church when I was very, very young and haven't joined anything since except for a brief stint in the Socialist Party. I'm a maverick, you know, but that doesn't mean I don't feel very strongly for my brothers and sisters.
Do you have a special feeling of responsibility towards gay people?
Toward the phenomenon of we call gay? Yeah, I feel special responsibility because I would have to be a kind of witness to it, you know?
You're one of the architects of it by the act of writing about it publicly and elevating it into the realm of literature.
I made a public announcement that were private, if you see what I mean.
When I consider what a risk it must have been to write about homosexuality when you did...
You're talking about Giovanni's room. Yeah, that was rough, but I had to do it to clarify something for myself.
What was that?
Where I was in the world. I mean, what I'm made of, anyway. Giovanni's room is not really about homosexuality. It's the vehicle through which the book moves. Go Tell It on the Mountain, for example, is not a church, and Giovanni is not really about homosexuality. It's about what happens to you if you're afraid to love anybody, which is more interesting than the question of homosexuality.
But you didn't mask the sexuality.
No.
And that decision alone must have been enormously risky.
Yeah, the alternative was worse.
What would that have been?
If I hadn't written the book, I would probably have had to stop writing altogether.
It was that serious.
It is that serious. The question of human affection, of integrity, in my case, the question of trying to become a writer, are all linked with the question of sexuality. Sexuality is only a part of it. I don't know even if it's the most important part, but it's indispensable.
Did people advise you not to write the book so candidly?
I didn't ask anybody. When I turned the book in, I was told I shouldn't have written it. I was told to bear in mind that I was a young Negro writer with a certain audience, and I wasn't supposed to alienate that audience. And if I published the book, it would wreck my career. They wouldn't publish the book, they said, as a favor to me. So I took the book to England and sold it there before I sold it here.
Do you think your unresolved sexuality motivated you at the start to write?
Yeah, well, everything was unresolved. The sexual thing was only one of the things. It was for a while the most tormenting thing, and it could have been the most dangerous.
How so?
Well, because it frightened me so much.
I don't think straight people realize how frightening it is to finally admit to yourself that this is going to be you forever.
It's very frightening. But the so-called straight person is no safer than I really am. Loving anybody and being loved by anybody is a tremendous danger, a tremendous responsibility. Loving of children, raising of children, the terrors homosexuals go through in the society would not be so great if the society itself did not go through so many terrors, which it doesn't want to admit. The discovery of one's sexual preference doesn't have to be a trauma. It's a trauma because it's such a traumatized society.
Have you got any sense of what caused people to hate homosexuals?
Terror, I suppose. Terror of the flesh. After all, we're supposed to mortify the flesh, a doctrine which has led to untold horrors. This is very biblical culture. People believe in wages of sin is death, but not the way the moral guardians of this time and place understand it.
Are you as apocalyptic about the prospects for sexual reconciliation as you are about racial reconciliation?
Well, they join. The sexual question and the racial question have always been intertwined, you know. If Americans can mature on the level of racism, then they have to mature on the level of sexuality.
I think we would agree there is a retrenchment going on in race relations. Do you sense that happening also in sex relations?
Yeah. Yeah, that there's what we would have to call a backlash, which I'm afraid is just the beginning.
I suspect most gay people have fantasies about genocide.
Well, it's not a fantasy exactly, since the society makes its will towards you very, very, very clear. Especially the police, for example, or truck drivers. I know from my own experience that the macho men truck drivers, cops, football players, these people are far more complex than they want to realize. That's why I call them infantile. They have needs which for them are literally inexpressible. They don't dare look into the mirror, and that is why they need faggots. They've created faggots in order to act out a sexual fantasy on the body of another man and not take any responsibility for it. Do you see what I mean? I think it's very important for the male homosexual to recognize that he is a sexual target for other men, and that this is why he is despised and why he is called a faggot. He is called a faggot because other males need him.
Do you ever hear anti-gay rhetoric in church?
Oh, not in the church I grew up in. I'm sure that it's still true. Everyone is a child of God according to us.
Didn't people ever call you faggot uptown?
Of course. But there's a difference in the way it's used. It's got less venom, at least in my experience. I don't know of anyone who has ever denied his brother or sister because they were gay. No doubt it happens, it must happen, but in the generality, a black person has got quite a lot to get through the day without getting entangled in all the American fantasies.
Do black people have the same sense of being gay as white people do? I mean, I feel distinct from other white people.
Well, that I think is because you are penalized, as it were. Unjustly, you're placed outside a certain safety to which you think you are born. A black person who is a sexual conundrum to society is already, long before the question of sexuality comes into it, menaced and marked because he's black or she's black. The sexual question comes after the question of color. It's simply one more aspect of the danger in which all black people live. I think white gay people feel cheated because they were born, in principle, into a society in which they were supposed to be safe. The anomaly of their sexuality puts them in danger, inexplicably. Their reaction seems to me in direct proportion to the sense of feeling cheated of the advantages which occur to white people in a white society. There's an element, it has always seemed to me, of bewilderment and complaint. Now, that may sound very harsh, but the gay world as such is no more prepared to accept black people than anywhere else in society. It's a very hermetically sealed world with very unattractive features, including racism.
I don't know. I guess I'm throwing something at you, which is the idea that gays look to blacks as conferring a kind of acceptance by embracing them in a coalition. I find it unavoidable to think in those terms. When I fantasize about a black mayor or a black president, I think of it being better for gay people.
Well, don't be romantic about black people. Though I can see what you mean.
Do you think black people have a heightened capacity for tolerance, even acceptance, its truest sense?
Well, there is a capacity in black people for experience, simply, and that capacity makes other things possible. It dictates the depth of one's acceptance to other people. The capacity for experience is what burns out fear, because the homophobia we're talking about really is a kind of fear. It's a terror of the flesh. It's really a terror of being able to be torched.
Do you think about having children?
Not anymore. It's one thing I really regret, maybe the only regret I have, but I couldn't have managed it then. Now it's too late.
But you're not disturbed by the idea of gay men being parents?
Look, men have been sleeping with men for thousands of years and raising tribes. This is a Western sickness, it really is. It's an artificial division. Men will be sleeping with each other when the trumpet sounds. It's only the infantile culture which has made such a big deal of it.
So you think of homosexuality as universal?
Of course. There's nothing to me that is not in everybody else, and nothing in everybody else that is not in me. We're trapped in language, of course, but homosexual is not a noun, at least in my book.
What part of speech would it be?
Perhaps a verb. You see, I can only talk about my own life. I loved a few people, and they loved me. It had nothing to do with these labels. Of course, the world has all kinds of words for us, but that's the world's problem.
Do you think of the gay world as being a false refuge?
It is difficult to be despised, in short. And if the so-called gay movement can cause men and women, boys and girls, to come to some kind of terms with themselves more speedily and with less pain, then that's a very good advance. I'm not sure it can be done on that level. My own point of view, speaking of Black America, when I had to try to answer that stigma, that species of social curse, it seemed a great mistake to answer in the language of the oppressor. As long as I react to nigger, as long as I protest my case on evidence of assumptions held by others, I'm simply reinforcing those assumptions. As long as I complain about being oppressed, the oppressor is in consolation of knowing that I know my place, so to speak.
Do you have good fantasies about the future?
I have good fantasies and bad fantasies.
What are some of the good ones?
Oh, that I am working toward the New Jerusalem. That's true, I'm not joking. I won't live to see it, but I do believe in it. I think we're going to be better than we are.
What do you think gay people will be like then?
No one will have to call themselves gay. Maybe that's at the bottom of my impatience with the term. It answers a false argument, a false accusation.
Which is what?
Which is that you have no right to be here. That you have to prove your right to be here. I'm saying I have nothing to prove. The world also belongs to me. Best advice I ever got was an old friend of mine, a Black friend, who said, you have to go the way your blood beats. If you don't live the only life you have, you won't live some other... Nope. If you don't live the only life you have, you won't live some other life. You won't live any life at all. That's the only advice you can give anybody. And it's not advice. It's an observation. Well,
scene.
That concludes. And scene. Oh, that's how you end it. I'm like, how do we do on a radio play? I need like a horse galloping or something away.
I know, exactly. Some clip-clops or whatever.
Or like
that
door
was
closed.
Awesome. Yay.
Just something a little different. We've never done like a script reading before.
I think it's good. I think people should just sit back and let it resonate in their mind. Listen to the words.
And it was one of those things that, like, we could have pulled quotes and talked. I just feel like James Baldwin just sort of speaks for himself. And, like, it's almost like our way that we got to have James Baldwin on the show.
Right on. Well, thanks, James, for that. It was fun. Woo! We are back again.
There it is. Thank you all for listening.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, guys. We got a tweet of the week.
What is it?
This is from, let me just, at dear_Gia. And they write, listening to Minority Corner and cleaning up my space. How's your Tuesday? Smiley face. And a picture of their desk, which is like filled with all sorts of fun treats and exciting, cool, neat, awesome things. So thanks for listening to us.
Is there a picture of us?
No, but I'm okay with that. Okay. I'm okay with that. I don't need no fandom like that.
I wouldn't mind. I'm just throwing that out there.
And you can put a framed picture of James.
I wouldn't mind a framed picture on your desk or in your office, in your cubicle. Send a picture, tweet at us that picture.
Oh, we're not gonna mind. It's awesome.
But also, back to the tweet. Thank you for that. That's awesome. And yeah. thing. And you all can also get involved in the conversation. I have a question for you all. Thoughts about the James Baldwin interview? We didn't really go into details about it or share in the Minority Corner Kids Club. No, what is it? Playground.
Yeah, Playground.
Minority Corner Kids Playground on Facebook. Thoughts, reactions to the James Baldwin interview. I think it's very fascinating. It's like listening to like a grandfather speak, because he comes from a different time period, has different ideas, but some of them resonate. Some of them are very factual to what's happening today. What are your thoughts and opinions? Tweet at us or join in the kids in the what is it? Playground? What are they doing? Barbecue?
Yeah, Corner Kids Playground.
We should start our Corner Kids barbecue for the summer next year. Think about it.
That sounds fun. I like that. Enough time to plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good. So don't forget to tweet at us at Minority Corner with a K.
Yeah. Oh, and don't forget the VMAs are happening this weekend, so you get to watch Jennifer Lopez get that award.
Yes. And we're leaving it at that.
I didn't say anything about it, Aneke.
Okay, good. I know. I didn't say anything. I'm just being preventative.
I just, she gets the award. It's her time. So
yes, it is. It is her time. She's waiting for tonight. Okay.
Tonight has finally come. So yeah. Good for her. Good for her.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy your week.
Well, and thank you for listening. Oh, and thank you to Brownout for the music.
Yes.
And thank you to our editor, Woody.
Yes.
And thank you all for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together,
we're the majority.
Wow, we did it. We did that one.
Ooh, yeah, we nailed that one.
We nailed that one.
Put that in the can.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.